Thanks, everybody, for joining us again today on Bridging the Gap. And as we try to do after all of the regularly scheduled Powell County Fiscal Court meetings, we're coming to you with Judge Executive Anderson, who is going to give us a rundown of what took place with your local government at the most recent Powell County Fiscal Court meeting. This was held September 12th on Tuesday. And as always, these meetings are held at the conference room in the Judge Executive's office at the courthouse, and everyone is always welcome and encouraged to attend. So, Judge, tell us how the meeting kicked off.
Yeah, this week, or month's meeting rather, was relatively short. We'd had several special meetings, so a lot of the business at hand had been taken care of, and naturally a number of court members are active in the Lions Club too, so pretty abbreviated agenda and got through it relatively quick, so there's not a whole lot to report. But we did start the meeting off, I think, appropriately with a moment of silence for twofold. First being, naturally, it was the day after 9/11, so we made mention of that, as well as, for those not aware, Billy Joe Martin had passed away, former county judge as well, a law enforcement officer, and kind of made mention of some of the things that he had done and gave him some honor. And naturally, the courthouse is one of the things that was accomplished during his tenure as county judge, so we'd had a moment of silence in those two regards.
Well, one of the interesting things I think about Billy Joe was, which a lot of people don't know, is he was the county's first county judge executive. That's correct, right?
It is. He was the last one that had judicial power, and that's what I said, with the complexities and diversity that's in the office today, to think that you had the judicial responsibility back in the day, it was really
would have been pretty complicated to handle all that.
It was definitely a different animal then, and he was the kind of neat that he was the last one to have it, as well as, like you said, the first executive when they changed and separated the judicial system out. So I'd had the good fortune over the time I've been in office, back before he got ill, usually once a month, he was pretty good about stopping by. So I got to hear several stories about, you know, things that happened in the past, and that's something I'll always have with me. And it was really interesting to hear how things worked and some of the things they got accomplished during those eras.
Yeah, he was definitely an interesting person. That is for sure. Anybody who ever met him would confirm that. But beyond that, after the moment of silence, I assume, as usual, you just go into the standard process of the meeting.
We did, and this month, like I said, I think most people with all the activities in the community, we didn't have a large crowd, and naturally, so no one was signed up in the public comment section. So with that, we moved right into the old business, and with that, we'd actually talked about this in years past. I know got real involved in it about the time of the last election. Naturally, the court changed some after there, and it kind of got derailed with everything. But in regards to the energy savings performance contracting, and for those, if we haven't talked about it on the radio before, it's basically kind of in line with the way I've tried to govern this administration a lot. We've always looked for ways to become more efficient, do more with less, and this concept, basically, it's been done throughout the state, and in the last probably 6 or 7 years, really, the Department of Local Government's really looked at it as a way to help local governments, and it's basically looking at all of your utility usages, whether, you know, your gas bill, your electric bill, sewer, all these things, and naturally, kind of appropriate, you know, the courthouse, which we just referred to, was I think finished in somewhere around 78. So, you know, a lot of that equipment is original equipment or relatively old. So you take just the heating and air units, and for anybody that frequents the place, there's numerous problems have been. Naturally, back in the day, they didn't have the technology or the efficiency they have, and you know, one of the things we really encounter on a daily basis is you have a thermostat in one office and it regulates the whole side of the courthouse. So you may go down and on any given day, windows be open in one office, they'll be running heaters in the next. It's just very, it could be as much as a 10 to 12 degree shift in temperature between offices. So being able to regulate that, naturally, anytime I pull in and see those windows, you know, I'm thinking about we're putting money out the windows and things. So not only that, but beyond the savings there, you know, just the comfort of the employees and the public that use it, you want a comfortable climate. It's proven that it affects efficiency and everything within employees and things. So basically the concept of this is we'll come in and we had a Greg Copley come, and he is basically somebody that Department of Local Government has contracted. He's with the University of Kentucky, and they'll come in and help us write our request for proposals for groups that do these kind of work. And what they'll do, they'll take a comprehensive survey of all of our facilities, what our energy usages are, and the concept being that potentially with all this old outdated equipment, you potentially upgrade all that to new things, and the savings, the difference in what the energy savings between the new and old will pay for the new equipment. So
right,
as well as, you know, like I said, get the comfort and make things a lot more tolerable. And looking at a lot of counties that's done this, and I think with the age of our equipment, it'll be something that I'm sure is going to allow us to realize pretty substantial savings, hopefully, as well as, just like I said, make a more comfortable environment for everybody that frequents any of our buildings. So pretty excited about that. And Court's all on board. But basically, we had him. He came and made a presentation on how the process would work. So that's something we'll get into, and hopefully, you know, naturally, within the next, it'll take some time to compile exactly what all we want to include in that, and then there'll be a process of selecting a vendor. But hopefully within the next couple months, there'll be some things, and we'll start to have some projections as to what those cost savings could be.
Well, and you know, you're exactly right. I think anybody who's tried to adopt more of a green personal home can tell you that the savings can be really, really tremendous. I mean, just personally, I changed out an HVAC a couple years ago, and the cost is just dramatic in what, you know, my home was built around the same time as the courthouse, and it is a dramatic difference in what you can just put back in your pocket. So I'm sure it will be definitely the kind of thing that pays for itself.
Yeah, I think so, and I'm pretty excited about when we get into this process, like I said, beyond savings, the comfort and things it'll add to the buildings.
Just better experience all around.
Exactly.
Okay, well, that's great. That's exciting stuff coming down the pipe. But what else came up?
The next thing we had listed on the moving into the new business portion was the new library director come made as required by these taxing districts. They have to bring their tax rates before the court, and we don't at this point. There's some talk about changing legislation, but at this point, one thing I think important to clarify here, when the court tax items are presented to the court, we do not vote them up or down. At that point, they're just brought to us. We make note of reception and, you know, that they've been brought before us. But
So it's more just to you acknowledge that
it's a procedural thing, and I guess a formality. But I guess that's one thing I want to clarify. You know, whether we agree or disagree with what any one taxing district does, we do not vote for or against that increase in the capacity of the fiscal court. We only acknowledge receipt and make mention of them. So she came and made their new tax rates, presented those to the court, and so really that was the only thing she had. She did say that she was very excited to be in this position and had plans for trying to continue to improve the library. So very short, like I said, basically the presentation of those. And I failed to mention there, Corey, when we started, Allison Vallandigham is the new director. I think a lot of you know, knew her, may have known her from, I think she'd taught 16 years at Clay City Elementary. Mm-hmm. So a lot of you may not know that she was in that position yet, but that's who is the new director.
So hopefully everybody will stop by and see her. They do a wonderful job there at the library, and I'm sure she'll continue to keep it that level of excellence that we've come to expect. Now, beyond the library rates, what else did we have at the meeting?
We had a gentleman come in and request to myself about accepting a cemetery road on Hurley Road. So as typical with those processes, naturally we have to look at it, but we send two viewers, and so two of the magistrates and myself will at some point go down and report back to the full court exactly condition or what's been, you know, get a better idea of what's been requested, see if it's something we can or cannot consider, and move forward appropriately according to what we find in that viewing.
And so when those roads, if they meet the criteria to be a county road, the county takes them in, and then they're maintained.
There's a little difference in, we shouldn't confuse, I guess, county roads with cemeteries that are accepted in. You know, I think in 99, somewhere along that line, there was actually a list of cemetery roads that were accepted into maintenance by the county system. And those are the ones typically, I mean, especially around Memorial Day or, in an event, there's funeral service. County helps maintain them and keep them passable. Okay. But
so it's not officially a county road, but there is a level of maintenance the county
has. That's correct. Okay. And like I said, they're not necessarily held to the same standards we try to keep our roads up to, but naturally there is a plan in place to try to keep them maintained and adequate that the family or whoever can make access to those.
Okay. All right. And beyond that, let's move on a little bit here to what was the next thing on the agenda?
I think about 3 or 4 months ago, Steve Asbury had brought forth, I think it's every 5 years, they have to have the hazard mitigation plan for the county. And basically, it's just spelling out, should we have a natural or man-made catastrophe, how that would be handled, the process, what agencies would handle what, how we would go about. And kind of appropriate, I guess, if we look at some of the events happening further south in Houston area and Florida and things, much what they're going through now, what should we have something, hopefully never to that scale, but how would we work through that process? And it's basically that plan was submitted, but one of the things that is just a resolution accepting that plan that we had to get to the ad district, so we just formally accepted that resolution to accept that plan. And and just kind of a housekeeping issue there.
Yeah, and these hazard mitigation plans, I've sat through several meetings on these things, and they really are a tremendous asset to the community. They're huge documents that offer up whose role it is to do what in the event of a natural disaster or man-made disaster. And it's definitely a positive for our community to have something like that in place, because you obviously don't want to be trying to figure it out on the fly when you have some massive catastrophe to deal with. So yeah, it's a lengthy process, but it's definitely a good one.
I think one thing, that's what and I guess I was somewhat the same way before sitting in this seat. That's one thing I think with emergency services in general, and I think we've kind of had this conversation on this show before, is I think oftentimes to the average public, if they see somebody in that role, and kind of I want to lump CSEP into the same deal, as it's kind of the same capacity, more designated exactly for chemical releases. But you see these directors, and I don't think the average public realize, naturally on their day-to-day business, they're going about the business of doing these kind of things, more preparing for or trying to mitigate against these events. And you don't see the value of them until you actually – unfortunately have a scenario where these plans come into place. But you also, it's funny to see when you see these catastrophes at different places, you can almost tell by the way they're handled how well their plans were outlaid. Absolutely. And how well they were practiced. And I think also kind of in line with what we're talking about, most of you are aware that we are a CSEP county. Like, it's like this coming week, statewide CSEP drills will be held, and it's very much preparing in the event we had a chemical stockpile release at the Army Depot. And that's one thing I like about that program. I think they do a little better than maybe some of the emergency service, regular emergency services, in that they do have these exercises every year where they actually bring out the equipment, set it up, go through real drills as to how that would function, and are scored and evaluated on how well they do that. And actually, if they're deficient, there's efforts to improve that. So actually, I think that hands-on going through the process other than on paper is very vital to making some of these things,
Well, of course, if you do have something come up, God forbid you have an emergency, particularly a CSEP type of emergency, you don't want the first time you've ever seen a piece of equipment to be right now when you have to use it. And it's tremendously beneficial to practice and go through them. So,
and I think, I'm pretty proud of how far we've come in that regard since I've been here. Thinking you would agree, and you've been a big part of that with the public information page, and what we've tried to do in the times we've had the EOC activated is, naturally you have law enforcement, you have EMS, you have dispatch, you have whatever other agencies, but at the end of the day, when something comes down, how are they going to work? Who's going to direct who? And we've made a lot of strides in trying to have that lines of communication open, a little bit better understanding. And I think when we've had our EOC activated, we've made great strides, I think, in preparation for any of those events from where we was at, and have actually practiced it in those events where we've had it open, and I think it functioned fairly good.
Oh, I would strongly agree from being in here and watching it work. I mean, just alone having the the plan in place and knowing the pecking order and knowing who's supposed to be doing what goes a long way toward making it far more efficient.